at last, the space comedy you didn't know you were waiting to see. The Ice Pirates. In the far distant future, in a galaxy where those in the know don't go, real estate is cheap, and they've got great sushi. But there's no water.
You got any water?
It is a time when desperate men will swing from the chandeliers. Just to get a drink.
Just take a look at that.
Good men, like Jason, space pirate, and explorer of the cosmos. His chief engineer and fellow rogue, Roscoe.
Here they come.
Oh, here, quit that.
And the beautiful Princess Karina. One tiny band who must bust their buns, battling the masters of all the water in the galaxy. The evil Mithradoids, famous for not being nice.
Killing you would be too easy. I have something better in mind.
The Ice Pirates.
Let's party!
See startling special effects. See depravity in zero gravity. See glamour girls from another galaxy. See kung fu robots. And delight in the mysteries of the seventh world. The one place in the universe to get a decent glass of water.
Don't do that.
Insist.
How's it going? It's going great. How's it going to you?
The Ice Pirates. A totally spaced adventure.
Welcome to The Greaties, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. Whether you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. Today we will be discussing 1984's The Ice Pirates. You gotta put the "the" in there, I always thought it didn't have it, but yes. Written by Stuart Ruffill and Stanford Sherman. Directed by Stuart Ruffill and starring Robert Urich Spencer. Mary Crosby and Michael D. Roberts. My name is Christy, and I am joined by my 80s time-warping friends, Kevin.
Whatever happened to "we rape, we pillage"?
And Ryan.
Hi, care to make a deposit?
Now, on The Greaties, we like to take a moment to find out each panelist's history with the film that we're analyzing, so everyone knows where everybody's coming from. So, Kevin, what's your history with the Ice Pirates?
You know, I never saw this in the theater. I believe at one point in the late 80s, I was hanging out with some people. I was walking through the house. It was on cable. And I watched a couple minutes and went, "What is this crap?" And I walked out. And I hadn't seen it until 2 hours ago.
Huh. Cool. Wow. Ryan, what is your history with this movie?
I saw it as a kid. I don't remember if I saw it in the theaters or not. I certainly would have been the right age to. But I definitely remember catching it on VHS a couple of times. And there's a couple of moments in it that, you know, as a 12-year-old, like, this is the coolest movie ever. As an adult, not so much.
Well, I have the pleasure of saying that I picked this movie. So, this was one of my go-tos when I was a kid. It was on my pirated HBO because we didn't have legit HBO. We had a can on the side of our house where we stole it off of somebody else. And that's all we had. We didn't have any other channels. We just had HBO. So it was on. It was on pretty heavy rotation, probably in 1985, so I watched it all the time, right between Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds. So, right around. They were my go-tos.
I love both those movies.
They were both my go-tos. So, This, oh, and for some reason, a lot of the movies that came out around this time, there were a couple others that I got confused with, which is the pirate movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another pirate movie. Oh, Yellowbeard. So sometimes, even though it's in space, and Yellowbeard is not, and neither is the pirate movie, but I would like mishmash different pieces of the plot in it. But then watching this, it was like a Celine Dion song. It was all coming back to me now. So let's delve into the wonder that is the Ice Pirates. So we get started with a big old long prologue because you know it's a good movie if they have to tell you what's going to happen and what the reality is.
They did it with Star Wars, but they show it to you and read to you at the same time in case, you know, reading is too, I don't know, bothersome.
Yes. Yes.
But that was happening in a lot of movies at the time because in addition to Star Wars, you also had Conan did the same thing. It comes up in other movies pretty regularly. Dune.
Right, but just show it.
Dune, you need a roadmap.
Same time.
Yeah.
Like
it just seemed to me having him read it while it's right there was like, oh, so you know who your target audience is. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you kind of have an idea. Pretty much after the interplanetary wars, the galaxy has gone dry. Water has become the only thing left of value. Waterworld. Evil Templars from the planet Mithra have gained control of the life-giving resource. Their power absolute, except for a few rebel pirates who survive by stealing ice from the great Templar fleet. Okay. So...
a lot to unpack there.
Yes, yes. And... you think that they'd at least make up something other than Templar and make it. I have a problem with these. These Templars are actually Templars.
I was okay with Templars.
They're wearing chainmail. They look exactly like Knight Templars.
Do you wonder?
I have a problem with that part of it.
I think it's a chicken or the egg thing. Do you think they put them in those chainmail costumes because they were called the Templars? Or do you think they had the chainmail costumes and were like, I guess we'll call them Templars? I don't know.
I don't know. That could be.
Because there are clearly some issues going on with costuming in this entire movie.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Right off the bat.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we have these costumes for this caliber. Let's just use them over here. We'll save money.
And just turn down the lights. Nobody will notice. Just turn them down. Just turn it down. So we
open. You know, this was supposed to be a drama, right?
Yes.
Deadly serious.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a drama, and then they decided, no, let's make it a comedy. Which I'm kind of glad they did, because making this, it would have been a comedy regardless. Even if they tried to make it serious.
I don't know. I think maybe the fact that they made it a comedy, like, well, let's make sure we write some jokes, because there's a fart joke almost like not even 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
It was like a couple of fart things and a guy on the toilet. It's like, which they wouldn't have done if it was a serious movie.
True. But why give it more gravitas than it deserves? It does not deserve that. Mary Crosby does not get a drama other than Dallas. No. So we open with the junky looking robots in a very dark ship. These junky robots kind of actually remind me of one of the movies that terrorized me or terrified me when I was a child, which is The Wiz. The Wiz terrified me.
Okay.
You're terrified of The Wiz?
Not just the robots. The robots in The Wiz, Nipsey Russell and all the there's something about it. And then the whole subway thing. Scared terrifies me. So these robots kind of put me off because they kind of remind me of some of those the evil robots. Angelica Houston is in this. There is Hollywood royalty in this.
Yeah.
Now she looks like
there's
she's
a lot
wearing
of great names in here.
She looks like
she royalty at the time though. In 84 was she royalty
now,
yet?
Now royalty, but then starting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was still John Houston's daughter. So,
mm-hmm.
And she's wearing two, like, those tomato plant guides on her shoulders. So.
That whole armor getup that she's in actually legitimately causes problems with this part of the early part of the movie, because it's so loud, it's interfering with the audio. Every time she moves, yes. There's like the clackety, 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 clackety. And it makes some of the dialogue hard to hear.
I also noticed that she is one of the few characters that gets at least 4 wardrobe changes throughout this movie. Like she's a warrior, but she has at least 4 trunks full of clothes in the back.
Right. And it's not like it's not done with a plot device in mind. It's just, no. Put her in this today.
This is Slinky. Put her in this. Angelica Houston actually, but she looks gorgeous. In 84, she was amazing.
She's stunning.
Before her accident. Yeah.
And somehow, if you notice in the one shot, she is actually taller than Ron Perlman just by hair alone. That freaked me out. This movie, in the fact, I had forgotten that Ron Perlman was in this, and I'm a huge Hellboy fan, and so watching it now, I'm like, oh, well, damn. And looking at him next to John Matuszak, I'm like, he's tiny. For once, Ron Perlman is not the largest man on the set. That's kind of interesting.
He's a baby.
He's baby Ron Perlman.
Like little Ron Perlman.
He's pre-Beauty and the Beast Ron Perlman.
I'm like you. I had completely forgotten he was in this movie until that the camera first time the camera panned past him on the rewatch, and it was I was shocked. I was surprised.
And you kind of had to look at him a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I was like, "Is that? Oh my god! Oh my god! He hasn't been Sons of Anarchy this whole time." Okay. So they get to an Imperial cruiser to steal the ice, and they cut a hole in the ship, and of course they end up in the alien toilet
joke.
And of course you get a weird alien who's still humanoid and still pooping
and reading something.
So apparently that's universal. Yeah.
There's no doors in the toilets.
Yes. You're just an open panel.
And apparently he was oblivious to the whole, laser torch cutting through the door 4 feet away from him. That took a good, 2 minutes of work to make that cut.
Maybe his species is the kind where once you commit, you got to finish.
Right.
We don't know.
Because then Roscoe was trying to open, was ramming against the cut. So there's a lot of noise going on.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably just thinking it's the pipes. Yeah. And it's kind of, we have one of our,
shouldn't have had that Taco Bell.
we have the ongoing joke of you get it. And then it ends up being Ron Perlman having to knock him out.
And that joke goes on a long time. It's not like a 1, 2, 3. No, they go through like 7 or 8 people.
They went, look at this running gag I wrote. No, that's not what a running gag is.
That's
just
a
long,
gag.
Bad bit.
So we kind of get to see a little bit more of Jason, who is Robert Urich in his tremendous 80s fro, and who is the pirate leader, and he ends up running into Nanny, but I can't remember where I have seen her, but she was in so much in the 80s. That
Natalie Corr.
She was in so much. I was remembering things that she was in, and she's usually aghast at something.
Mm. She does that well.
Yes, she is very good at being aghast. But we get to see Karina, Princess Karina of Argon, who is in a state of induced sleep, which I have to say was ocean-owned property, because is it safe to be in that much dry ice?
Yeah, there was a lot of vapor in there with her.
What?
Yeah, there's other ways to do that vapor, but it's that's can't be good for you.
Was there a reason for her to be asleep like that? Because it didn't seem like it.
They didn't really say.
There's lots of things in this movie where why are they even doing that?
It's like, I thought she was dead at first when they had that little, like, glass covering.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, she died like Snow White. And they just, had that. We like to look at dead bodies, so here's a glass casket.
Well, I mean, he does. He doesn't know either, because he checks. He checks to see if she's breathing, and then he checks
to look on her shirt.
Tries to check her boobs. but so they tell her,
this movie is such a mess.
Yes. Yeah. It was the '80s. So then they go to steal some water, and they go into a big open warehouse, which really just looks like a soundstage that they got. And they go into having a fight with the Templars. I tried to keep track of what was happening, and I couldn't, other than the hapless robots. The robots all have some kind of defect where they'll hit each other or hit, try to hit the good guys, or they'll lose.
What a mess is that? That's such.
They're so
At that point, I was aggravated with the movie. It's like, why? What do you just cut that shit out? You don't need that.
They needed it for the merchandising. Because don't you want a hapless robot? You know? So they
let me ask you a question. Yeah. Just a quick question, because they go to this big ship to steal ice.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they put it on their tiny little break up into three part ship?
Oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought about that. Now you've now you ruined the movie. I love the movie up until
dang
I
dang it. About
that. I looked at him like, I was like, where are they putting it? Because he had this little nothing ship. It's like, how are they stealing it?
Man, forget John Matuszak. You're the killjoy, Kevin.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Using physics and shit? That's wrong.
I don't mind stupidity, but they really didn't explain it. Even baseballs had that big vacuum that sucked the air out of the planet. They had nothing.
And we saw them moving like one slab of ice, right? We didn't.
Yeah,
see,
no,
like,
we didn't see them taking any more than that.
Yeah.
Maybe they.
But then they ran back to the ship with all the robots, and there was no ice.
Yeah. He carried the lady though.
Yeah.
And they went. They went back to that one little tiny hole that they cut that was obviously too small for that block of ice.
And definitely almost hit poor Mary Crosby's head on it.
I literally flinched when they walked her through that hole, carrying her through the hole. I was like, oh God, it's going to hit her head.
Okay, I was hoping for it.
How many takes did you have to do with this? So they battle the Templars and then they escape. This was the part I had forgotten about, the whole eunuch slaves thing that they lobotomize and castrate them.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what's up with the weird deck crew with white leotards and wigs? And there were women, so I don't quite understand exactly how that. But I was like, what the hell? And then it goes into the later scene about the prisoners being turned into slaves that are castrated, and they put them in white wigs for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there was a sale at Danskin.
Piratey?
I guess.
Yeah, it's a little piratey, I guess, taking of slaves. And I don't know where the castrating thing came from, other than they thought it would be funny. Ha ha, look, yes. We're going to castrate you.
And talk in a high voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
because it's just Robert Urich and Jason and Roscoe. Who get captured because the ship broke into threes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they escape. She kidnaps the princess and the Imperial cruiser pursues them. And he orders Zeno, which is Ron Perlman, and Maida, which is Angelica, to leave in escape pods and leave and be free before we get captured. And then they get into a video game fight that looks like a cheap Space Invaders with a naked, half naked woman on the side.
And this was one of those things where, like, I think they were going for the joke, but they didn't commit to it completely. So there was a brief moment where I couldn't tell, wait, are they trying to be funny about the video game, or are they, it was right on that line. Like, no, you need to go further with that joke.
This is what happens when you get old men who are not Mel Brooks doing a movie going, Hey, this looks funny. This is what the kids do, isn't it? The kids use that, and we can sell the robots as like a merchandising. Who wants a robot?
And I love the woman on the side of the panel because it's that artist, sci-fi artist. I can't even think of his name now, but they just like cut her out of a picture, a poster they bought, and just slapped him on the side. It was the people who did all the set decoration and stuff. And the costumes, oh my God. how bad was their budget?
I think it was somebody's cousin. Somebody was like, "Hey, my cousin knows how to buy clothes at the Goodwill. Here,
you should see him on Halloween.
He has incredible cosplay.
He was a bunny." Yeah.
So Zorn,
get him.
We get to meet Zorn, the leader of the Templars, and he imprisons Jason and Roscoe. And as the prisoners are being transported to the planet Mithra, the only remaining source of water in the galaxy, they learn that their sentence is to be redesigned or castrated and sold as slaves. And they get to meet Killjoy. And I used to love John Matuszak. I think he was on a couple episodes of The Love Boat. So I loved that.
Yeah.
He's Sloth from The Goonies.
But he finally gets to be himself and not have to wear prosthetics. But he's a thief, and he points out that the members of the clergy are spared because of the Templars' fear of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like an underlying theme in this whole thing, where it's kind of like taking it back to that Knight Templar thing, where it's like, well, God. And there's a couple other quotes where it's like, well, if God exists, well, if this planet exists, there must be God. I was like, wait, when did this turn into an existential crisis? This is not... It's freaking Spencer for Hire and the chick that killed JR, or shot JR. Did not...
Spoilers.
This is not difficult. So...
I will say, John Matuszak in this he's actually quite charming.
Oh, yes.
Like, he gives a delightful performance.
Yes. And Killjoy impersonates a monk and gets released. That's kind of like his gimmick throughout the movie, at least twice, where he is always impersonating or disguising himself as something so that he can try to escape. Jason and Roscoe pass through the stages of the assembly line to get castrated.
What a horrible little scene that is.
The one thing I will defend about that scene is the guy who is fighting for the proletariat.
Yes.
The guy who's shouting, you know, "Your workers unite, power to the people, walk off your jobs," actually like made me laugh. And that guy was completely committed to that bit. And I was like, you go, buddy.
He was. He definitely was.
I kind of think he was with the studio and he was actually talking to the actors and the union.
Right.
He
was talking to the crew.
I was agreeing with him the entire time.
You don't need to do this.
I love it. It's by like, oh, look, they're putting shaving cream and they're shaving just a little bit, but they're not.
I was like, wait, are they going to shave his chest? Wait, no, he's still got his luscious little chest of foil of hair. What the hell?
It was so weird. It was like, here's a good idea. Let's not follow through. A lot of not follow through in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's start and not finish. So they're going along, and of course they run into a couple people, a couple of ladies who are on there who are, and he kind of does his little, "Hey, you want to meet up later?" She says, "I don't think you'll feel very up to it."
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. He's not going to be up to it.
I was trying to see if I could find that dude that was the prisoner, if he was anybody, because he looks familiar. No. Nope. Ice Pirates, Auto Man. He was in Auto Man.
Is that Sander Johnson?
Yeah.
I think it was, right? Yeah.
You know what? I guess that's the test right there. What two projects can kill your career automatically? Ice Pirates and Auto Man.
Auto Man.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Your career is dead. So
a thug and how the duck would have been the trifecta for that guy.
So as they're passing through and get to the jaws of death, they end up on the other side and Princess Carina secretly spares them. They still dress them up in the white wigs and leotards, and they are sold to the highest bidder, who is Princess Carina. She puts them to work at a party. Oh, my God, this party. Oh, Jesus, this party.
This is where I started to have concerns about the costuming for the movie.
Yes.
Because of the inconsistency of it. Like, a lot of the outfits don't look like they came from the same costume shop. Nope. There's a lot of like Shakespearean doublets. There's a lot of tights, a lot of like that 80s Flash Gordon sci-fi look.
A lot of spandex.
So this is where I was starting to think that like they pulled from different sources.
I saw Michelle Pfeiffer from Scarface walking to the party. I'm pretty sure.
And then, of course, they did get the best face painters from the local theme parks to do all of the face painting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a party, which we don't quite understand why they're having the party. Nobody knows why they're having the party.
Nope. She's apparently throwing the party.
Yeah.
It's her party.
It's her party, but for what? I don't know. Is she supposed to marry the guy?
Didn't they say it was for the remembrance of her father or some nonsense?
It's way too happy for a remembrance of his father.
Right? That's what I thought, too. I thought, okay. And then they show the party. I'm like, oh, her dad must have been a dick because they are glad he is
Woo,
dead.
He's gone. Woo. If their goal is to, her goal of this party is to take the two pirates and escape, like, why throw a party?
Yeah.
If that's your goal, why not just disappear in the middle of the night? Why do it at a party that you throw? Well,
I think the party was planned beforehand. That's where they were headed in the beginning.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. All right.
But so.
But then again. Okay.
So we have the ripoff future Club 54. And the Karina asks Jason to help her escape to the pirate moon Zagora, where she has urgent business. And they flee the party on motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycles. With the Templars in pursuit. And oh my God.
More of a scooter than a motorcycle.
Killjoy.
They couldn't afford the Tron.
No. Killjoy and Roscoe get to meet the pimp bot.
Yep.
The highly unnecessary.
I'm just at this point, I love the pimp bot. I'm like, this is the only character so far. Like, what's his story? Where's he going? I want to see.
So we watched a movie called Heartbeeps. I don't know if you've ever seen that horrible, horrible movie.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Kaufman
and Bernadette Peters as robots.
Yeah.
I own it on DVD. I don't know why.
Oh, my gosh.
It was in the $5 bin. But I subjected my co-host, Dave, to it. He will never be the same. That's kind of how I feel about Pimp Bot. Pimp Bot would have fit in very well with that movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But I liked him here because it was just like, it was, at that point, I had given up. And I was like, okay,
at that
whatever.
Point? It took you that long? Like,
well, I was like, maybe they're going somewhere here. Maybe this is going to be, and I was like, oh, nope.
Nope.
Pimp Bot. Sweet.
Pimp Bot. And you don't know, they act like they're going with him, but then they end up in the ship anyway.
I think they used him for transportation to get to the ship, right? Because that's why they decide to go with him, the Pimp Bot mentions transportation, and then they go, oh yeah, transportation.
So the group commandeers a warship. Karina is reunited with her nanny, and Jason plots a course for Zagora. Karina orders Jason to arrange a meeting with a rebel named Lanky Nibs.
Which is a perfect pirate name, by the way.
Yes.
If you're doing a pirate movie, that is a perfect pirate name.
True. Or poor.
I saw Lanky Nibs open for Devo in 1984 at the Palladium.
When Jason balks at the plan to buy his services with water on the ship, she demonstrates their seriousness by taking a laser pistol and never doing anything with it. But eventually, she does say that the water is rigged, that if anybody tries to do anything with the water, the whole ship will blow up. And Roscoe, the genius, can't do anything about it. So. Then we go to Mithra, and we get to...
Wait, I hope you don't expect that part of that plot line to pay off, because it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It's never mentioned again.
Nope. So on Mithra, we get to see Zorn and the other member of... I mean, the other member of Hollywood royalty, John Carradine.
Mm-hmm.
This was his actual last movie. What a way to end your career.
Someone's going to kill you. It's going to be the Ice Pirates.
I guess. I don't know.
He only had to do the one scene.
Yeah. Didn't have to get up. Just got to lay there. Say he was going to die. And Zorn pretty much reveals that she is falling right into his plan to get on the ship just like he planned. Then we go back up to the warship, and this little tiny dehydrated egg is in the corner, and this disgusting thing comes out and bites Roscoe and Jason. And they find out that it is a space herpy. Yeah. Yep.
Now let's take a minute here.
Let's take
a small second.
Yeah.
First off, it falls out of, it's one of the things that fell out of the closet on the spaceship. Yeah,
and it's like literally a broom closet. Yes. Like.
So stupid. But, you know, it's space herpes right along the way with space rabies from the aforementioned Howard the Duck. It was, that's the kind of writing we're getting.
Yep.
Just tack the word space in front of anything.
Yep.
And you're good to go.
If they remade it now, it'd be Space AIDS.
Aww.
So it's. But it had the whole alien, like, look at this scary alien-type creature. And it's like, oh, no, that's just space herpes.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You're thinking, ooh, it's going to get interesting. We're going to get, like, an alien moment. Like, nope. Facehugger, nope. Not at all. Nope.
No, they went to the bottom rung.
Oh, yeah.
They had an alien, and they went to the bottom rung.
Yeah.
Horrible.
So on Zagara, the pirates reunite with Zeno and Maida. And many obligatory aliens in the bar scene, because why not? You're on a pirate.
Because Star Wars.
Yeah.
And by many, we mean two, right? Because there's really only two masked aliens.
Yeah.
And one of them, they are reusing the mask from the guy on the toilet.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there, I guess there's a third alien.
Specious.
The third alien is when they try to pass off the bird with no feathers as some sort of alien.
That poor bird.
Which was really unsettling.
I'm like, did they just find a bird that had like that neurological thing there with they remove all their feathers to just put, how do you put that in the trades? Not even looking for a bird with no feathers.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I know that's a thing. I know birds, there are birds that have that, but the poor thing.
I love to think that, I love the idea that you think they actually went to the trades to look for anything in this movie.
No, it's really going to be, hey, my cousin Vinny's uncle has a bird that's taken all its feathers off. Oh, that sounds great. We need something.
Put it in the movie.
Get him.
It's normally a blue macaw.
Let's do it.
But not now.
Let's do it. My ex-girlfriend's got a molting bird. Get her.
So they also have the Zelda Rubinstein looking waitress, who I actually had to go back and check the credits, because I'm like, holy shit, was Zelda Rubinstein in this? Nope. Different person. But
they got the other lady who looks like that.
Got Patsy Maloney. That's close enough. And they learned that Lanky Nibs is hiding in Sweetwater, 50 miles outside of town, because now we're in the Old West.
What a horrible name for something that is so rare.
Yes!
To name your place Sweetwater.
Yeah. Ugh.
That's the unobtainium of Ice Pirates.
Or if it was a Wild West movie, it'd be like naming it Gold Town.
Yes. Yep.
We're going to lots of Gold Town. Woo!
So Jason and Karina alternately have to romance and convince Frog Lady, played by Marsha Lewis, to take them to Sweetwater in her land cruiser. And
now, did we skip the sword fight?
Oh, yes, we did.
Can't skip the sword fight.
No.
Because the sword fight is specifically one of those things that when I was 12, I was like, oh my God, that was so cool. Because we've got the beheading that happens in there.
Yes.
And there's the beat of like, oh, what just happened? And then his head falls off. A beat later, and when you're 12 in 1984 and you think that's the coolest thing ever, and then you watch it now and you're like, oh my God, that whole scene is terribly executed.
Well, and I keep forgetting that about the fact that Angelica Houston looks like she's trying to look like she doesn't know what she's doing and she's confused. Mm-hmm. And then she just kicks the guy's ass.
Right. Like, she's, her character is supposed to be a badass, but her character is then playing like she's not a badass. But then the way the whole thing is filmed and shot, like, you can't actually see any of the action that's occurring because they're, the camera's just too tight on what's going on and nobody's really moving.
Yeah. It's so,
it was a very civilized stand there and swing your sword at the other person.
Right.
But it was the opposite of everything in Princess Bride.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she ends up, cause there are bounties out for, Jason and Roscoe. So these are bounty hunters that have gone
huge.
Huge. And she defeats them handily but sloppily, and they're okay. In the meantime, Jason and the princess are with Frog Lady, who's apparently the costume makeup budget ended below her neck. but she's sweet on Jason and agrees to take them out to Lanky Nibs. So Jason's shocked by Lanky Nibs because we see a picture of Lanky Nibs. I just like saying Lanky Nibs repeatedly.
Yeah, you do.
It's a fun. It's a fun two words to put together.
I think it's gonna be my if I ever have to come up with an alias, that's gonna be it. Lanky Nibs.
Lanky Nibs.
Lanky Nibs.
But I mean, we've seen a picture. I mean, he's a pretty young guy in the picture.
I love that in the future, on a spaceship with lasers and force fields and computers, like, she has literally a black and white photo of this guy that she shows to him.
And Lanky explains that he aged 20 years in a time warp. Not the dance, but the actual time warp. He warns Jason that, okay, you probably got followed. But he does recognize Karina and pretty much says that her father actually did find the seventh world where the water is and in the center of the galaxy, but the Templars ambushed his ship and slaughtered the crew. If he's still alive, he's going to be with Wenden, holding him captive in the tri-system. And then we get the road warrior moment of the bounty hunters. It's discount road warrior because it's only one vehicle.
Right, yeah.
And they destroy the land cruiser, kill the Frog Lady, and a pursuit ensues, and somehow Jason kills all of them. So that was kind of sloppy as well.
Yeah, the Frog Lady, the way she went out, it happens immediately at the beginning of that action sequence. And I felt really bad for her because it really felt like they were obviously just trying to get rid of that character because they didn't want to avoid some sort of awkward situation later with Jason.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, that poor character.
See, I thought they killed her because it was one of those things like, look at how bad they are. They killed the character that no one really cared about.
But they do end up wounding Lanky Nibs really badly.
Lanky Nib.
And before he dies, he pleads with Jason to go and find the seventh world, says it's real. And so he decides, okay, he goes back to the ship and gets the crew together and they fly to the tri-system. And then it begins. I'm going to say this right now. I have not really, until the last 20 years, known who Bruce Vilanch was. I think I knew probably from like later this week or just like different interview shows where he'd just pop in there because he wrote the Oscars and he wrote this and he worked with Whoopi Goldberg and different things and he wrote stuff. I forgot that he was in this movie. So apparently he's been a part of my life for a very long time. And I feel bad that I did not remember that he was this part, but now I remember why I forgot it. I think it was partly psychological safety. So we end up on Wenden's planet, the woman warriors riding unicorns, pretty much the physical embodiment of heavy metal.
It's amazing.
Capture everybody but Roscoe. And they learn that
racist
Wenden is a very temperamental exiled royal who likes his servants. And those women are extremely buff.
Yeah.
Those women are fantastic warriors. Wasted in this movie. Wasted in this movie.
They looked looked great. They looked great. But yeah,
Bruce wasted in this movie. Ruins that scene.
He does. He ruins most of the movie.
It's like, well, it's like, look at all the beautiful people and the frog lady's counterpoint, Bruce Valanche.
I had also forgotten that Bruce Valanche was in this movie. I don't think I knew who Bruce Valanche was when I saw this movie as a kid. So on the rewatch, I see his name in the opening credits, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't forget he was in that. And when they first introduced Frog Lady, for the first like minute and a half of Frog Lady's existence, I thought that was Bruce Valanche.
Me too. I'm glad you said that. I was ashamed to bring it up.
No, I'll fess up to that one.
Oh, but no, he commands the Glamazons that are in this on this planet, and he orders one to kill Jason, but then Roscoe comes sweeping in.
Swinging in like a pirate.
Swinging in the second pirate swing in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And he interrupts it, and then everybody is in like this weird cuddle huddle fight thing. I don't know. And they knock Wenden's head off of the robotic body. They find out he's actually just a head.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, of all things to survive, that. His head. Roscoe enters. He saves him. Da, 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 and then he... okay, I'm going to have to say I did chuckle at this part. Where he's got the head. And he threatens the head. Mm-hmm. And he takes the feather off of the spear. And he
tortures him with a feather.
Okay, I need to stop for 1 second. Because we probably at this point need to go back just a hair.
Okay.
All right.
Where Bruce Valanche says, I need a Tylenol.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And then she says, you're going to need more than a Tylenol. I'm like, can you please stop saying Tylenol?
Least make it space Tylenol.
You know, had they said space Tylenol, I would have been like, brilliant.
Right.
It works. I wonder if Bruce Valanche wrote some of the gags in this movie when they changed it to a comedy.
Oh, like I'm sure.
He was like a consultant.
It does. Some of them do feel very like Bruce Valanche jokes.
I mean, he just improvised a lot of his lines, like the lines that weren't necessary. It's like, oh, here's a funny line. Well, they did it afterwards.
What's Tylenol? Just leave it in. Just leave it in.
Holy shit. I'm sorry. I cursed. I said, at that point, Karen went to bed for a nap. She went like 10 minutes in when I was like, I give up. She was like, I'm going to take a nap. And she woke up when it was over. She goes, how's your movie? I said, you had a better time.
So then he tells him that he's in a room, that Vasco is in the room, and they go into the room, and there's seemingly her father, who hugs her, but something's wrong, and they find out that he's a robot. And they take him apart. Somehow he looks like one of the junkie robots now. And
what was the objective with the fake dad, do we think? Because like, was that supposed to fool anybody? Because it fooled her for 20 seconds tops before she saw through it.
Well, when she hugged him, then she realized that, you know, he was hard and, you know, like metal.
Uh-huh. Thanks for clarifying.
So, but I almost think it's because it's like, oh, they made a perfect copy of her dad. So he has the dad's memories?
But he didn't really say anything. I mean, he said a little bit, but he didn't... I don't know.
Did her dad build the fake dad, I guess? maybe to fool.
Yes. Because
Wendon? Okay.
Because because Wendon says that everything there on the planet was because of Vasco. Mm-hmm. So Vasco provided him with this entire environment. And then was not there. It doesn't really say what happened to him either. One more dangling participle of this freaking movie.
And how great would it have been though if she'd hugged the dad, he had gone beep boop. Oop.
So they take him apart and find out in the programming, and it leads her to something about a ring. And they find out that Wendon's got the ring in his mouth.
Gross.
And she takes. I remember this from when I was a kid, and I actually used to do that with my parents' wedding rings. I used to set one wedding ring on top of the other, and like after I watched this, I was like, "Is it gonna tell me something?" No.
Oh, okay. All right. So you did the. Okay. All right. You didn't keep your parents' wedding rings in your mouth.
No, I didn't.
Okay. All right.
That's what I thought you were going for.
That's like, what
no,
I thought.
No, I did that.
And now you've explained it. That's, yes. You explained it very ice parody.
I did. Yeah. I did. I was incomplete, and I left details out. Yes. So she spins the ring and it actually turns into like a little hologram, Princess Leia style, of her father saying, you know, the coordinates and you go and you cannot deviate or you will be stuck in the time warp forever. They make a point of saying that very clearly.
Yeah. Up the stakes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then they kind of split up as they're heading toward the time warp. And we have our romantic moment. Ba, 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 ba.
Okay. A lot of water in that romantic moment.
What the hell was it? It was like an acrylic CD that suddenly made the whole thing, like made the ocean happen and then rain. And
When he walks into the room, like one of the first things he says is, "Hey, I brought you that tape I told you about." So it sounds like he made her a mixtape.
Yes.
Yeah.
The ultimate sign of love in the 80s.
It's a mixtape. And then when they play it, it even says it says the name of it, which is, I believe it is called Passion Storm.
Yes.
I think you will
Passion
find.
Storm.
And the voiceover at the beginning even says, "All rights are reserved." For this thing, so
so funny.
I don't know if
I found that funny. That would have been funny. So but wasn't it a twin bed that he put her on? It was like what a small little space.
It's space.
It was like a Chase lounge.
Yeah, on the floor.
But yeah, and then you're dropping it's a rain scene, so they're getting rained on. But water in this world in this universe is currency. It's gold. It's money. So you're dropping money on yourselves.
Oh, they're making it rain. Holy shit! 1984 made it rain first.
Literally made it rain
on the sex futon.
Mm-hmm. On the sex cot.
That scene is now more brilliant than I gave it credit for. Okay.
The sex cot. Okay. So the Templar battleship suddenly like notifies them that they're in the time warp, and Zorn makes contact saying, informing Karina that she has done exactly what he wanted her to do.
Brilliant.
Yay. And so they captured the warship and they start fighting with a bunch of robots. And then we have the time acceleration. Now this I remembered for like this was the cool part when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And pretty much we find out Princess is pregnant, Princess has a baby, and apparently never puts her hair up or cuts it. And so we keep by the time he reaches Karina's quarters, they tell him that she's pregnant. By the time she gets there, he's got a baby. He's like, "How do you know it's mine?" He pisses in his face.
That old chestnut.
Yep, and I guess that's mine. And time continues to accelerate as the humans age. The baby turns into a little boy. Nanny turns into a skeleton.
Oh, very Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
That one. Mm-hmm.
Pirates grow huge beards and afros and just hair and become elderly and are pretty much overmatched by Zorn's endless supply of robots. However, just as...
Can I just say, this scene was another... Every fighting scene in this movie is so junky.
Yeah.
Everything with the robots is so hard and horrible to watch.
Yes.
Because it's just like, wait, are those... Okay, those are their robots. These are our robots. Wait, what?
Yeah, I couldn't tell them apart.
And then when they speed it up, it didn't help.
Nope.
No, it did not.
I knew what they were going for, but man. Sorry.
The one thing that kind of saves is the robots, their action sequences. I'm doing air quotes for that, action sequences. Like, they're so bad that because they're robots, your brain can kind of go, oh, that's how robots in this world operate and fight. So it spares us having to watch the humans do presumably equally terrible choreography and action sequences.
Yes. They're emulating the
humans. Forgive
the
robots. Yeah. It's easier to forgive robots being bad at it than it is humans being bad at it.
Even though they're people in robot costumes.
Yes.
So Jason...
Wait, they're not real robots?
No, they're not.
What?
They're not. So Jason and Roscoe are losing hope and they're walking very slowly away saying this is the end, and they finally go to like they actually put elderly actors in the place and son Jason, who is still Robert Urich but hot young Robert Urich, swings in and saves them. Even the bad guy has now become decrepit and old and in like a little motorized wheelchair somehow. Where did that come from? Like, he just planned for it at some point. At some point, I might get old. I need this.
It came from the Big Trouble Little China set. Yes. That's where that came from.
Yeah. Much of his costuming did.
Yes. And of course, the little old lady who is now portraying Princess Karina with the hair, and she gets stuck. Jason!
Oh,
Jason! Oh! That's our son.
At this point, they had run out of money to do reshoots, so they were just like, "No, keep it,
just keep it."
It is. It's a funny little moment. It's ridiculous and funny.
It is one of the things that I just really. That whole time jumping is what always stood out in my mind from when I was a kid. So as young Jason embraces his aged parents, the warship exits the time warp, and everything returns to the moment where the acceleration started. So they're all back on the bridge as their normal selves, not aged. And
Nanny's alive.
And yep, Nanny's alive. And they find out that the Templar battleship was 1 degree off course and is now lost forever in the time warp. The Seventh World...
So as a plot line, that whole action sequence, that climactic battle...
Was nothing.
Didn't actually matter. Nope. Never actually happened.
Nope.
The good guys won by following directions, and the bad guys lost because they slightly deviated from those directions.
I think that tells us a very valuable lesson.
Yeah. Follow the directions.
Follow the directions.
Listen to your GPS.
Yes. Unless it takes you into a river.
I also like to point out that in that action sequence of where time is being accelerated, we see the space herpy that has gone missing on the ship. It gets killed. Percy the robot gets to kill the space herpy. But
does it matter? It's back.
End of the movie, all of that is undone, so the space herpy is still alive on that ship.
And there.
Oh my God, so it's like real...
Go ahead.
It's real, like real herpes. It goes away and comes back.
Yes.
Oh my God. So deep. I didn't realize it was that deep.
He just flared up. So the seventh world comes into view, and you pretty much see it is Earth. Pwah, pwah, pwah. And so they're bringing the space herpy to Earth? Shit. Okay. Jason, Karina, and the crew celebrate the victory and realize they're out of business.
And happy about it.
And somehow she thinks that her father's going to be back on the face of the planet. So I don't know exactly.
Again, no follow through.
Yeah, not a clue. And that is the end of the movie. And it ends very 80s TV show way, where it is the credits over pictures still from the film, just in case you forgot that this happened.
Yeah. Remember this scene that you saw 30 minutes ago?
Well, the music was very TV showish, you know, and they could have made this for TV.
I'm really surprised that Belisario wasn't attached to it at some point because he did all that kind of stuff. It was kind of like the A-Team ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So originally, we've got some trivia. We had kind of talked about that it was going to be a serious sci-fi film. It had a $20 million budget. MGM slashed the budget to $8 million and then had the script rewritten as a comedy. So it's all MGM's fault.
Oh my gosh.
Just going to blame them.
Okay. Let me ask a quick question. What year do you think they were when they ended up on Earth, the seventh planet? What do you think it was in our future or our past?
I think it was their present. I think it was 84. I bet they landed in 84.
I think so, too.
I was kind of curious. I would have liked to see that play out. But I want to know what you guys thought. So please continue.
Okay. So after the pirates are captured, the spaceship approaches a domed city for landing. The same domed city sets were used for Logan's Run. We talked about
way better movie.
I thought it looked familiar.
There are a couple things that are reused here. In the control room where the alarm is triggered, the television screens, they're watching Rollerball.
Mm-hmm. I caught that because they watch it at least one other time in the movie too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right before the Thanksgiving dinner, which is clearly an homage to Alien.
Gene Roddenberry once jokingly said that Ice Pirates was singularly responsible for bringing back the death penalty in California.
Gene's got jokes.
We love Gene.
according to a crew member, the entire sound team was fired mid-production and replaced without explanation. Which is
again,
Ryan explained it earlier.
Yeah,
it's crap.
That the whole first half of the movie is there's stuff you can't hear because of clacking armor and its sound is bad.
Yep. Let's see.
What do you bet they filmed this in sequence? You know how movies aren't filmed in sequence?
Yeah,
that's what they did.
Kevin Costner turned down the role of Jason, so this could have been another Kevin Costner movie that I hated. But it wasn't.
I love the fact, I read this too, and I love the fact you're going to tell me this. I know how much, Christy, you hate Kevin Costner and everything.
I do.
And I would have loved to see how, it's like, I loved this movie as a kid, then I realized it was Kevin Costner.
Then I really, it was like my world was destroyed. Yeah. And Dave would have just been laughing his ass off. So,
yeah, he would have.
As the cages are being unloaded on Mithra, the car and the hovercraft are from Logan's Run. And they both resurface.
Yeah, the city might as well use the car.
Yeah, and they both resurface later as the Pimps and Zorn's vehicles. They reuse them several times. Jason is named after Jason and the Argonauts. And this is based off of the ancient Greek myth of Jason and his crew of sailors as they set off on a quest to search for the Golden Fleece.
It's exactly like that.
Exactly. I thought it the whole time.
I will say, I literally had that thought during the movie. I bet they named him Jason after Jason the Argonauts. but it's a poor, poor reason. Like, the analogy is very thin.
Yeah.
It's like saying that Gummy Bears was named after when bears attack.
Yes. Let's see. This is Stuart Raphael didn't really do any other movies. He only did one other movie. It was The Philadelphia Experiment. So has a thing about sci-fi fantasy and time travel.
I've seen that movie. I remember liking it.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
What happened to this one?
That was also 1984.
Yeah. So maybe he just spent all his energy on the other one and not this one. This was the influence behind the name of the men's hockey team Ice Pirates in Rochester, New York. I don't know if
they were losers too.
Gotta name your minor league team after something. Sure.
Yeah. Let's see.
They couldn't call him Space Herpes.
No. Michael D. Roberts was in an episode of Vegas, which, of course, starred the fabulous Robert Urich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, that was a good show.
I will say, I thought both of those guys, Robert Urich and Michael D. Roberts, I thought were excellent in this movie. Like, yeah, they're working with garbage as far as like a script goes, but like they sure gave it their all.
They were having fun.
Robert Urich was charming as all get out. I love that Michael D. Roberts plays a lot of the gags that happen to him. He plays them completely straight, like with a little bit of like, I can't believe this is happening to me. Like not as an actor, but like as his character. His character's like, I can't believe this is happening, but okay. And he more or less plays it straight.
Yeah.
He's great.
If you miss it, there is a cameo by Max von Sydow as one of the bounty hunters.
What?
Yes.
I was looking for it. I couldn't find it. I missed it.
Yep. He's there.
Wow.
But he's only a blip because he's also filming Dune at the same time. Because that got released the same year. Also, I think a better movie.
Yes.
But, all right. And that is all I have for trivia. Ooh, any more thoughts, gentlemen, on this lovely The Ice Pirates movie?
I had a thought, but I didn't have a follow through for it. So,
so you're an ice pirate.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
And honestly, I really wish they had made it serious. I wish they had given them money and just said, look, make a serious film. I would have liked to seen the serious version of Ice Pirates with a budget.
With a budget, yeah. I don't think they could have made a serious version without a budget.
No, with the $8 million out of $20
million? Yeah.
I just think that because it had some, you know, if you look at like, well, if this was serious, there would have been no space herpes. There would have been, you know, they would have really, it would have been more like Dune. I think they would have had that weird sci-fi-ness to it that Dune has.
Yeah.
As opposed to that wham, wham, wham. Like, we're not exactly Mel Brooks, but we're trying. Because the cast is pretty good.
I wonder if anybody's actually gone in and edited it. Who would bother? edited all the funny stuff out. It'll be about a minute and a half long.
Right. It'll be very, very short. And even the funny stuff, again, air quotes.
Yeah.
The funny stuff goes on too long. They take too long to set things up. They can, you could easily cut 30% off of this movie and not lose anything.
Yeah.
The prime example is that very first setup of the guy on the toilet. You take care of him. You take care of him. You take care of him. And like they literally do that 7 or 8 times.
Yep.
You could have just, you know, you give it the first two guys go by and say, take care of him. And then the third guy takes care of it. That's your comedy.
It's the rule of threes. Come on, man. You could edit. You probably could edit that part. But
yeah.
But really, would be much more.
Do you have to have a guy? No, you have to need a guy at a toilet.
No, you don't even need the guy.
Well, that's how you know it's a comedy, Kevin.
you say you're going to take the comedy out, and I will say rephrase that to take out the things that are supposed to be funny.
Right.
And you just have them break through, and then you see them in the next scene. There'd be no toilet thing.
Yeah.
So
we're spending more. Spending more time on this movie than the actual filmmakers probably did.
Good for us.
So we're good. All right. So let's go into our rating system. If you do remember, like Ryan, you and I probably do kind of remember seeing it. I'm going to rate it as of when I saw it originally. If you would like to, you can do that, or you can just rate it as of. It's going to be a negative. scale of 1 to 5.
On a scale of 1 to 5. So as a kid, like I said, there was things in this movie that I loved as a kid that I thought were just the coolest thing ever. As a kid, I'd probably give it a solid 4 because it wasn't, it wasn't Star Wars, but it was the next best thing. Yeah, I didn't know what I was talking about at the time. So now having rewatched it as an adult, I'm not going to go all the way to the bottom. I'm going to give it a solid 2.
Ooh.
I'm gonna give it some points for it. Has just enough self awareness that it knows what it is. It doesn't really try to be anything other than a cheesy sci fi with some jokes, and some of the actors give really good performances. So I'll give it a 2.
Cool. All right, Kevin.
Okay, since I didn't see it fully when it first came out or after that, I'll go on today's rating, which I will give it a 0.5. And that's only because it was kind of nice to see the people who were in it, but not see what they were doing.
So a 0.05.
Cool. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
All right.
It was painful to me.
It pained you. It pained you.
It did.
It will wake you from a solid sleep now. The memories of this movie.
I will wake up screaming, space herpes!
Oh, God. Space herpes! Oh, God.
Space herpes, spiritual edge!
They took it to Earth! They brought the space herpes to Earth.
I also, like Ryan, I loved this movie as a kid. I don't know why, except for the fact that it was space, and it was funny. And I also thought the movie Murder Can Hurt You is a funny movie. So I have a very low threshold for funny. So I'm going to say that I probably would have also given it a 4. Now, after watching it, I'm so torn because things I remembered, especially this, I will give it a 1.5. Because purely because of 1, Ron Perlman, 0.5, John Matuszak.
All right.
So yeah, so that gives a that gives a total of 4 divided by 3. And I don't think this baby's gonna be very high. It's a 1.3. 3333. So yeah, suffice it to say, this does not hold up to today's audiences. I can see the span of a moviegoer today watching it for about 5 seconds and going, nah, screw this. So it unfortunately does not hold up despite the strong performances by a couple of performers. It's the lack of follow through. There are more questions than answers with this movie.
And not in a good, like, Christopher Nolan question.
Yeah. Like, why didn't they do this? And why didn't they do this? What happened to this? They started this, but did, yeah. So not in a good way, not in a thought-provoking, you know, existentially satisfying way. Just in a, hey, I think they ran out of money, so they couldn't finish this plot device there.
Right.
So, yeah. So suffice it to say, The Ice Pirates does not stand up, or space stand up. I don't know. So thank you so much for joining us, Ryan. Welcome in your first Grady's appearance.
Thanks for having me. This was a fun time, even if the movie wasn't.
Yes. And as always, Kevin.
Oh, it's my I love this. So thank you for having me.
And check out our Facebook page and our Twitter, and check out and see. And let us know if you've ever seen The Ice Pirates, or if you possibly can think of a movie worse than The Ice Pirates. I'm up for it. I'd watch anything. I got nothing else to do. So, and as always, if you want to support us, check out patreon.com/ZeoZazz and contribute if you can. And help us keep our bandwidth going. And I'm gonna need a good drink after this movie.
But some water.
We'll see you next time.
Hey, Jets! Hey, Bloods! Y'all want to pump some titties?
Yeah.
No.
Hey, it's been a long time.
Finest titties on Mithra.
No, get the hell out of here.
Transportation and exotic cribs be included. Yeah, blood. These mamas transport your ass.
Transportation.
We take our water, gold, credit cards, and high-priced drugs.
Yeah.
I heard that. You got the deal. Let's book, Blood. This be my bad chariot.